After a lifetime of researching the dynamic and enigmatic world of light entertainment, I've decided to ditch my notebook and meet the people who inspire me. What makes them the people they are? How do they feel about the show business landscape in which they find themselves? And in a world where anyone can be a star, is there still a need for performers who have universal appeal? Come with me on a journey of discovery as I get a unique insight into Britain's favourite stars with a little help from my glamorous assistants. Yeah, well, I say glamorous, more like hazardous. And of course, we'll have a bit of fun along the way.
For over 40 years, Chris Tarrant has been a staple of British television, first honing his craft on regional television before anchoring the anarchic Saturday morning children's extravaganza Tis Was on ITV alongside Lenny Henry. In 1994, Tarrant moved to the BBC, replacing DJ Mike Read for the early evening pop quiz before landing the Saturday night dating show Man O' Man. Returning to ITV in 1998 for the all-conquering Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, Chris found himself on primetime TV 7 nights a week as contestants attempted to answer 15 questions to win the significant jackpot. I was interested to learn the secret to his longevity and get his take on an unparalleled career in British television. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Chris Tarrant. So, you first became a familiar television face when you teamed up with Lenny Henry for the cult children's entertainment series Tis Was.
Yes.
Nowadays, it's remembered for being totally unscripted and unpredictable, but how much free reign did you really have?
An enormous amount of free reign. We used to kind of make it up. I mean, the only thing was that there was... there had to be a plan, because... And I was producing it, so there were quite a lot of limitations, like, you know, you've got to take a commercial break at 58:02 and all this sort of stuff. And because it was so popular, there were a lot of commercial breaks, and we always had to do that. And there was quite a lot of control about what we did and what we said. But to be honest, we were pretty sensible. We didn't look very sensible. You know, we weren't going to upset anybody. We weren't going to go at them blindly. It would be almost impossible now in the sort of PC world we live in. I think now it would be impossible to do Tis Was with, you know, all the health and safety concerns and all that, with children sitting on my knee and Lenny pulling them up by their ears and throwing buckets of water over their mothers. It seems to be so, but I just think it would be impossible to do it now. But at the time, it was just fun. It was a hoot, you know. And, I mean, I used to have criticism that sometimes... in the chaos of a Saturday morning, and oh, there was a child crying. You know, you think, well, I'm sorry, we don't try to make them cry. But when you've got a studio full of kids from any age up to, you know, from 4 to 12 or whatever, and they're all running about like mad, one or two of them obviously will cry. And it's like saying, you know, we'll ban all kids' parties because a child cries. Well, it was the same with Tis Was. You know, occasionally it happened. We didn't want it to happen, but it did. And, it, you know, they soon cheered up and they sat on their mother's knee and whatever, and we cheered them up. But it was a brilliant time of my life. And as you say, it set me and Lenny, Sir Lenny as he is now, and, you know, Spit the Dog, Sally, all of us. He set us all up for life, really. It sort of, it did change all our careers, you know, over 7 years. And it's quite weird. If I do, I did one yesterday, funnily enough. If I do an after dinner thing now, and at the end I do a Q&A, you know, bear in mind that since Tis Was, I've done 20 years of Capital Radio, I did Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, 15 years, Tarrant on TV, etc., etc. The first question will always be about Tis Was. It's quite weird.
Yeah. And did you enjoy sort of going up against the sort of swap shop Noel Edmonds kind of thing?
It was our mission to destroy Noel Edmonds. Every By God, we did. Yeah, I mean, I think that was quite nice. I mean, I've seen Noel quite a lot. And we get on fine. I think what was quite nice was there was a very definite choice. So you had multi-coloured swap shop houses, and you had Tis Was houses, you know. And in some places, the parents would actually send the kids out, and the kids would go up the road to a Tis Was house, you know. Well, they sat and watched a nice, sensible multi-coloured swap shop, and we were fairly chaotic and fairly anarchic. But we were also a lot more fun, you know. So, you know, people made their mind up. I mean, in the Midlands and many parts of the north of England, Tis Was completely dominated. And in the south, we were kind of split between us and multicolored swap shop. I think it was quite healthy now, looking back on it. There should be. And we didn't really have any great any great plan of what we were doing. We just hated Blue Peter. And I think that's all we ever did, really. We wanted to be very different from the rather twee selection of children's programs that were available at that time. And also, by the time we finished, I mean, it had such a huge cult following that probably, I remember reading a thing somewhere with my producer's house on where it said something like 62% of the audience were over 18, which wasn't quite what we set out to do. But it just, I mean, every student in Britain got up with a hangover on a Saturday morning and watched Dizzles, you know. And all the bands did it. Everybody was anybody at the time. It was the best fun for them to be on, because they're all big lads themselves. So, you know, we had McCartney, we had The Who, we had Queen, we had ABBA. Everybody who was around, you know, Status Quo, et cetera, et cetera, they all came on Tizzles. It was good fun.
Yeah, excellent. And then in 1990, you started the irreverent Tarrant on TV, which looked at the various ways that other countries presented their television. How did you remain on that fine line of gentle jostling without being accused of xenophobia?
I don't know that I always did. Mainly I did. We didn't get that many complaints. Well, we did have complaints about certain things, but we're not saying... We will quite often show something that we didn't actually approve of, and we're actually saying, look, this is what they do in Finland. This is what they do in Japan. This is what, particularly Japan, obviously, or this is what they do in Southeast Asia or whatever. So we weren't always condoning stuff. We were just saying this is what is in television, you know, at the moment in Finland. Finland, they had some dreadful stuff about almost sort of condoning child abuse and paedophilia and stuff. I mean, it's horrible, but we showed it just to say, my God, this is appalling, but you ought to know. I mean, it was really us just laying stuff out. We didn't reject many items. Some we did, because we actually said, you know, I can't sit through that. It's so horrible, I can't watch it. But mainly we just said, this is... I mean, there was some stuff in Holland, which is a very sophisticated country, which even then, back 20 years ago, if you ran it, you know, on primetime British television, there would be an absolute outrage. So it wasn't always the Far East and Japan. I mean, Japan, they were clearly mad.
Yeah.
But, you know, some of the European stuff was pretty shocking and just not acceptable to our sort of taste at all. But we just laid it out and said, here, it's up to you. You know, this is what they do.
Yeah. Okay. And then in 1994, you replaced Mike Reed for the musical game Pop Quiz.
Yeah.
How daunting was that to, you know, this time join an already established series?
I didn't enjoy it much, I must say. I met a load of great people. I met people like Jarvis Cocker and Ted. I don't know. I don't think I'm always best at things that, I suppose, Tarrant on TV, I did take over from Clive Jones, actually. But mainly I'm best at things that I'm there at the beginning so I can shape it myself. Pop Quiz, I kind of inherited a format, which I thought was a bit old anyway.
Yeah.
It did reasonably well, but I only did 1 year, and it was for me, it was just quite fun meeting some of the bands who I hadn't met on Capital Radio, but otherwise, you know, it wasn't one of the highlights of my career. It wasn't a low light either, it was sort of so what year, really.
Let's talk Man Oh Man. Looking back, that was quite a bizarre format, wasn't it? And
it was truly wonderful. I loved it. I mean, the women in the audience were just disgraceful. All 400 of them were just baying for men's blood. And these guys came out with all the swagger and look at me, girls. I'm the greatest thing since sliced bread. And the girls went, no, you're not. I mean, and they all started chanting, in the pool. I mean, it was just silly, you know, slapstick, if you like. But it was a hell of a great night to record. I mean, I really enjoyed it. And when Millionaire took off, I mean, when Millionaire started the first year, it just went through the roof all over the world. It was just this massive hit. And I'm still contracted to do another series of Man Oh Man. And people were saying to me, people were writing, like, I can't believe you're still doing Man Oh Man when you're doing Millionaire. I said, I tell you what, I love it. I have such a laugh every night. Why can't I do that? You know, and I did. And I was an absolute hoot. Some of the women were absolutely shocking. Their language, their aggressive behaviour towards men. You think, God, some blokes going out home to that girl. My God, I can't find that. I had a great time. I really enjoyed it. It was good fun.
You mentioned there about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. We were writing, I think that started in 1998, I believe.
Yeah, and 98 started.
That was, obviously, at that point, Britain's biggest ever sort of prize on a game show. What was your first impressions of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire?
It was quite weird. I mean, thinking back now, I must have been mad, but David Briggs, my producer on the radio, he came up with this format. It was originally a thing we did on the radio called Double or Quits. And he then said, look, I've got this TV. He sort of left radio for a couple of years, and actually he struggled, which is quite weird because he's now one of the richest men on the planet. But he had a hard time sort of switching across to TV. And he said, I've got this format, which is a development from what we did on the radio, this Double or Quits thing. He said, at the moment, they're calling it Cash Mountain. Are you interested? I said, to be honest, David, I've got so much, you know, going on. I was doing Tarot TV and obviously radio every single morning and loads of other bits and commercials and stuff. And I said, look, I'm not being funny. I don't think I've got time for another series or a game show or something. And I think I was a bit snitty about, you know, game show. I didn't want to do anyway. Yeah. It wasn't great, to be honest. And he said, well, do me a favour. He said, would you just come and do me a pilot? If I ever get permission and get it off the ground in anybody's interest, because both ITV and BBC had rejected it. And he said, if I get somebody interested in the pilot, would you come and do a pilot for me? I said, yeah, sure, because I was the only person really new, you know, from the radio that sort of had worked on TV for very long. The only other person he knew was Kenny Everett, who was completely mad. So I said, yeah, sure, I'll do a pilot. But I don't quite know, I suspect I don't want to do the, you know, the series, if the series happens. Because quite often you make a pilot and the show never, ever sees the light of day. So I did the pilot. I remember thinking, this is actually quite good fun. I quite like this. It's quite exciting. And then we did a second, that was in June. Then we did a second pilot in July. And my bits were pretty much the same. I mean, we, you know, my lifelines, all that stuff, the catchphrases and phone a friend and all that was pretty much as it was in the first pilot. And in fact, as it was eventually, you know, in the UK and all around the world, because the format never changed once we got it established for every country. But the big thing they did in the pilot, the second pilot, was to change all the lighting and get rid of some pretty dreadful music. Pete Waterman wrote a sort of theme tune for the first pilot, which was the kind of thing you had in those days. It was all about having lots of money and having a great time and having lovely lighting. It was quite cheesy.
Yeah.
But that was kind of what you did in those days. And Paul Smith, the boss man of the whole thing, changed all the lighting to that sort of dark and the blue and the, you know, all that stuff. And also threw away Pete Waterman's theme tune and replaced it with those sort of, those really scary sort of don't get there and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Which these guys, the Strachan brothers, wrote Matthew and, not brothers, father and son, Matthew and Keith Strachan, they wrote all the music in one long overnight session, and probably that made them, I've no idea how much, a lot of money, because those theme tunes go out all around the world still. You know, Millionaire went out to 120 world countries, and the Strachans get paid every time you hear those notes.
Yeah.
So they're very, very happy with it. So it's a pretty good, nice work.
Yeah.
So that really, and then that was July, and then I was by now thinking, well, actually, I wouldn't mind doing a series. It's quite fun, having said I don't want to do it. I mean, the idea that I ever turned down Millionaire now makes me sort of cringe at night and wake up. Because it was a wonderful thing and very successful and very lucrative for everybody and all that. And I then did 15 years of it, and it was just huge. I mean, I remember the first show we recorded was on a Sunday, and it went out on a Monday. And the next morning, so bear in mind, only one had gone out on TV, and I'm walking up a hill in Wembley where we were recording, we're going up to a hotel. Sort of 11 o'clock the next morning, had a meeting, and then went up to this hotel to get a quick bit of lunch and a wash and a shave, whatever. And this guy was driving past in a lorry, pulled the window down, and just shouted out, "Hey, Chrissy, phone a friend!" And I thought, God, that is amazing, because that's only ever been out once.
Yeah.
You know, anywhere in the world, that's only been said once on television. And this guy already has got it in his brain. And I mean, the reality is that every single day of my life, including the 3 years since I retired from Millionaire, I still get that every day. It's already happened a couple of times today when I went and get some petrol and stuff.
Yeah.
And it's fine, I'm immune to it. You know, all those catchphrases just took off all over the world. And actually, the show took off. I mean, the show went to, you know, everywhere. America, Australia, India, China, Japan. I mean, everybody just about took it. Every country that took Millionaire, which was in the end just over 120, it always went to number one in the ratings. It might be number one for a month or 3 months or, you know, in some cases, best part of 2 years or whatever, but it always was number one for a long time. It just works everywhere. It's this brilliant, simple format, and everybody can relate to it. And once you've seen one, you know exactly how it works. It's very, some game shows you see, you think, I have no idea what they're doing, it's so complicated. The Millionaire format is so brilliant and so simple.
Yeah, like you say, obviously it went, it blew up, didn't it? It went massive, and
yeah, I remember seeing some ratings at the end of the first month, and I think 18 of the top 20 places were Millionaire, and yeah. Two were one was Crossroads. One was Coronation Street, and one was EastEnders. And that was just monster. And obviously, it couldn't keep going at that pace. You know, it was huge in America. But they only ran it for 2 years, you know. I mean, we got up to something like 19 million viewers a couple of nights and all that stuff. But, you know, after a while, people thought, well, you know, if I miss it tonight, it doesn't matter, because there'll be another one tomorrow night and all that. So it's sort of level. But for years, it was getting 7, 8, 9 million.
Yeah.
You know, only the last couple of years, the ratings began to fall away. And I think we all got a bit tired of it ourselves, actually. I loved it when I was doing it, but I was sort of glad to finish. You know, like everything else, I was glad to finish Tisballs. Yeah. I was glad to leave Capital. It's always time to move on.
Yeah, we were going to ask you, actually, like, sort of how you felt when it came to an end, whether or not it was sort of sadness or relief or a bit of both. Or
a bit of both, I think. I don't know, when it stopped, I mean, we all knew about 3 months before it stopped that it was finished, and I was as much sort of instrumental in the decision as anyone else. And I actually said, if you want to get someone else to present it, that's fine. They said, no, we think it's done its run. We couldn't actually imagine it without you. So we all moved on, and I kept very busy ever since. And I didn't feel any great sadness. It was almost a relief, but I look back on it now with a huge amount of fondness and nostalgia. I mean, I had an amazing time doing it, you know, but most of the things I've done in my life, I've just had this, I have had such a nice time doing what I do for a living. You know, I had brilliant days, you can imagine, on Tisballs. 20 years of Capital Radio were some of the happiest days of my life. Traveled the world with all the same guys, get around the world and the same producers, and you know, we become, I'm seeing all next week for a big Christmas bash, and the Capital time was probably one of the happiest. But Millionaire was just huge in every way, and everything about it was just massive, and I loved it, and I loved the fact that it was a sort of, I suppose it was the peak of my career in terms of what you can achieve, you know, but, and I just had a real buzz doing it, you know. I loved it, and I liked the people. I mean, I liked some of the celebrities that came on because they were people who would not normally go on a game show, like Sir Alex Ferguson, like George Michael,
yeah.
You know, guys that wouldn't do game shows, Paul McCartney and his then wife. But, you know, we had the most extraordinary range of people came on. But really and truly, my best times were just ordinary members of the public playing for what were clearly life-changing sums of money, you know, £100,000, £250, all this. I mean, you know, it changed so many lives for the better. You know, there's nothing wrong with winning money. People say, oh, well, you know, they didn't work hard for it. Well, you know, you get one chance in your life. Why shouldn't you take it? It's hard enough.
Yeah, definitely. And then more recently, in 2017, you returned to TV for a Channel 5 programme, Extreme Railway Journeys.
Yeah, that's become very popular, though. I'm quite surprised. I mean, I'm just doing it for a bit of fun, really. I suppose I hadn't given up work, but I sort of certainly slowed down and thought, I don't really want to work very hard anymore. I mean, without being funny, I don't need to. But at the same time, I think I just have to do enough each year just to keep my brain from, you know, slowly falling apart. And, you know, I really enjoyed it. I mean, the first one we did was the Congo, which was just extraordinary. I thought, oh, we're never going to get a series out of this. I mean, the train was something like, the first train we ever filmed was 6 days late. So I went round filming me on the station, me on the bridge, me talking to the ticket collector, me in the booking office, me on the platform, I mean, everything except actually me on a train, because we didn't have one. And then that night we started running, filming on the train and all that, and then we actually broke down in the small hours of the morning, in total darkness in a tunnel in the Congo, and I thought, my God, I mean, it was genuinely scary. But, you know, we've had a lot of adventures doing it. I mean, filming in Zimbabwe was pretty scary last year. Bolivia was famous because that's where we had the film stolen, and half the crew went down with altitude sickness. Yeah. So it has been a bit of an adventure. But I mean, I'm a real traveller anyway. I've seen most of the world. But I must admit, in the last 4 years doing the railways, I've seen so much more of the world, you know. I've really enjoyed it. I'm straight off we're doing Christmas and stuff over here with the family, and then I'm off again in January. I'm going up to the Alps and filming up there.
Yeah.
And then we'll see where we go the rest of the year. I'll certainly do one more year of that. And then I don't know what I'll do after that. I don't know. I might do another year. I'm not sure yet. But I have enjoyed it. It's been, you know, we've had a real buzz. I mean, I've been to Japan, I've been to the States, Alaska, you know, all over Canada, Australia, India. I've seen most of the world all over again from the point of view of rowers. It's been good fun.
Yeah, it sounds like that's a bit of a sort of passion project, if you like, where you...
We were
sort of going to ask you about that kind of thing, sort of where you're more of a veteran, if you like, of entertainment now. How much do you sort of pick and choose what projects you want to put your name to?
Totally.
And...
totally.
Yeah.
I'm very careful because I don't want anyone going, oh, you know, what's he doing this rubbish for? You know, I've never done that, actually. I mean, even when I sort of needed money when I was younger, I never really did anything. I thought, no, I don't want to do this. This is just rubbish, you know. And you do see people, I've seen friends of mine doing things, and you think, he's only doing this because of the money, because he needs the money. There's no way he wants to do this. So, I've been really lucky. I mean, I've had a really good time, and most of the time, in fact, nearly all the time, doing the TV and radio stuff, I've just had a real buzz, you know, after doing it. I do think, people always say to me, you know, I can tell you enjoyed that, and I'm always sort of best at doing things that I'm obviously enjoying, you know, laughing or whatever. Yeah. And I think that's good, and it's healthy, and I mean, I said to you before, I am very lucky, and I just had a great time doing what I do.
Yeah. Looking back over your career, would you say there's a particular proudest achievement?
It's kind of hard. I think I was, although Millionaire was a sort of international monster success, I think the thing I was proudest of was... We took the Capital Radio Breakfast Show to number one in the ratings. I mean, we completely stuffed everybody else in sight, including the Evanses and Logans and Steve Wrights or whatever. Even though some of them, you know, are really close friends of mine. It was a very competitive time. And we just stayed there for about, I don't know, 14 years or something. We were just huge all across London. We just, you know, whenever a new station came in, we just sort of stepped up a gear and did extra things and whatever.
Yeah.
And I think that was the most satisfying because it was a very long-term commitment at a very unfriendly time of day, you know, the middle of the night sort of thing. And I thought, to keep it up like this is pretty cool. So, yeah, I mean, I got the Sony Gold Award and all that stuff, and I think that probably means more to me than, you know, lots of the awards I got for TV stuff. It was a great time, Kevin, and I loved it.
Yeah. And you mentioned a little bit about what you've got coming up. But what's next for Chris Tarrant? What have you got in plans?
Not a lot. I've got a beautiful house in the middle of nowhere. I've got another one in London. I've got a very nice missus. Got an whole army of nice kids. I'm getting an increasing number of grandkids now, which is good fun. So as long as I do just a bit of the year that keeps my brain sort of ticking over, then the rest of the time I'm quite happy to go watching cricket around the world, going fishing, okay, all over the place, you know, et cetera, et cetera, and going out with my sons, watching football and stuff like that. I have a very sort of busy life. I like to write, so I've still got another couple of books probably in the next year or two, but at the moment, I'm just chilling out and doing some rowing.
Lovely. But, yeah. A big thank you to our guest for being the subject of another Beyond the Title interview. If you like this, why not browse the website and see if there's anything else that takes your fancy? Don't forget to like our Facebook page to receive updates of forthcoming interviews and to see more information about me and what I do. Thanks again, and hopefully see you next time for another Beyond the Title interview.